Good evening to everyone, and let me take my 2 minutes to express my great appreciation for the invitation to come and to be a part of these discussions, to express my appreciation to Mac and his family for being here. It's always a very challenging thing to engage in formal public debate. Those of you who may never have participated in and prepared for one have no idea what's involved insofar as the study is concerned. But I can tell you it is rewarding for those who engage in the study, and we hope and pray that these discussions will be of benefit to you, that you will take what is said by both men, study them, and compare them with the Word of God. Now, let me say just a word about my plan of attack, as it were. I am in the affirmative, and I will not have a lot of opportunity because of the length and the way that I prepared my affirmatives to respond to an awful lot of the negative material that Mac will present. I do plan to respond to a lot of his negative material, but I have two affirmatives tonight. I have them very carefully planned out. If I can incorporate some statements in response to his negatives, I will do so. If not, then I will save my responses to his negative material until tomorrow. So let me say again how much I appreciate being here. It is a tremendous honor to be a part of these discussions. I pledge to you and to Mac and to his family, I will conduct myself as a gentleman and as a Christian. Mac has the same reputation as a gentleman and as a Christian, so you can expect from us a good Christian discussion. With that said, let's begin our discussions. Let me define my proposition as it has already been read. The Bible teaches that the second, i.e. the final coming of Christ, occurred at the time of the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. By the Bible, I mean all 66 books, constituting both the Old and the New Testaments, as we call them, teaches that it imparts knowledge, wisdom, understanding, and facts. And that is that the second, that is the final coming of Christ, by that I mean the time of the judgment and the resurrection of the dead, occurred at the time of the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. I believe the last part of that is self-explanatory. Let me make one statement of caveat. I do not believe that the fall of Jerusalem was the resurrection, but I believe the resurrection and the second coming occurred at the time of the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. So this is my affirmative. Now, I want to introduce to you what is, to me, an absolutely fundamental and critical fact, and that is this. This will be the focus of these discussions. All New Testament eschatology is the reiteration of God's old covenant promises made to old covenant Israel. Now, my opponent believes that the old covenant and Israel as a covenant people legally died at the cross. I believe this to be patently false. Why? Well, because Paul, as he stood on trial, said in Acts chapter 24, said, I have a hope in God that there shall be, literally about to be, a resurrection of the just and of the unjust. Where did he get that idea? Where did he get his doctrine? I believe all things that are written in Moses, the law, and the prophets. In Acts chapter 26, verses 21 to 23, Paul said, and now having obtained help from God, I stand and testify both to small and great, saying, no other things than that spoken of by Moses and all of the prophets, that Jesus Christ was the first to be raised from the dead and to testify light to the Gentiles. Likewise, Peter, as he anticipated the restoration of all things at the second coming, and I will use the term parousia, the Greek word, as he anticipated the second coming of Christ at the time of the restoration, said that all of the prophets, yea, from Moses, from Samuel, and all who have ever spoke of that eschatology, which was his hope. John, likewise, in the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 10 and verse 7, says that in the sounding of the seventh trumpet, the mystery of God, foretold or spoken of by the prophets, would be completed. We therefore have a united testimony from the New Testament writers, all of whom tell us that their eschatological hope, their hope of the second coming of Christ, their hope of the resurrection of the dead, came from one source. It was not new revelation. It was found in Moses and the prophets. Now here's a question. How could the New Testament writers be anticipating the fulfillment of a dead law containing dead promises made to a legally dead covenant people. If, as my opponent believes, that the old covenant and Israel as a covenant people legally died at the cross, that means that all of the promises found in that old covenant died at the same time. I want you to turn your Bible now to Daniel chapter 9, 24 and following. Daniel was given a great vision of the 70 weeks. And he was told 70 weeks are determined upon your people and upon your holy city. Now, six things are then enumerated as promises that would be fulfilled within that 70-week eschatological period. Now, I asked Mac, and by the way, we've agreed to call each other by our first name, so I'm not being informal here. But I asked him, at what point of time and with what events were all of the constituent elements of Daniel chapter 9 fulfilled? His response was, no later than AD 70. Now, what that means is that Daniel chapter 9 is, without any equivocation whatsoever, a promise that was made to Old Covenant Israel. It is not a promise made to the church divorced from Israel. It, therefore, is not a prediction of the end of the church age. And again, let me reiterate to you that Mac believes that all of Daniel chapter 9 was fulfilled no later than AD 70. Well, what does that mean? What that means is, if I can demonstrate that Daniel chapter 9 predicted the resurrection of the dead and the second coming of Christ, that proves without any shadow of a doubt that resurrection is therefore posited within the framework and the time of Israel's last days, not at the end of the church age. That would mean, therefore, that by an affirmative proposition, my opponent's view would be completely falsified and my proposition would be established. The great question, therefore, is, does Daniel chapter 9 predict the resurrection of the dead? And I answer that absolutely positively. I want us to, therefore, take a look at some of the constituent elements that are mentioned in Daniel chapter 9. Daniel was told 70 weeks are determined to seal up vision and prophecy. Now, in my book, which is on my table back there, entitled Seal Up Vision and Prophecy, I demonstrate that from scholarly consensus across all eschatological paradigms, it doesn't matter. There is a 99.9% agreement that seal up vision and prophecy means the confirmation of the prophetic office and its cessation. Now, if that consensus is correct, that seal up vision and prophecy means the confirmation of the prophetic office and the cessation of that prophetic office through fulfillment, if that consensus is correct, then that means that Daniel was predicting 70 weeks were determined to fulfill, to give and to fulfill all prophecy. Not some of it, not a little bit of it, not even most of it, but all of it. I want you to notice also that Daniel does not say 70 weeks are determined to seal up a vision and a prophecy. Also, there is no definite article in the Greek, or excuse me, the Hebrew of Daniel chapter 9, as if Daniel were saying 70 weeks are determined to fulfill or to seal up the vision and the prophecy. There is no single vision, no single prophecy in Daniel's prophecy. It is 70 weeks are determined to fulfill and to cause to cease the prophetic office 70 weeks. In other words, Daniel 9 foretold the time of the fulfillment of all prophecy. Let's look a little bit closer. Daniel 9 promised the fulfillment of all prophecy, that is specifically all of Israel's prophecies. Now take a look at Revelation chapter 10 and verse 7 again. In Revelation chapter 10 and verse 7, it promised that in the days of the sounding of the seventh trumpet, the mystery of God foretold by the prophets, those are Israel's prophets, would be finished. Now watch this. The completion of the mystery would be completed, that is fulfilled, at the sounding of the seventh trumpet. Revelation chapter 10 verse 7. But in Revelation chapter 11 verse 15 and following, in the days of the sounding of the seventh trumpet, same time as Revelation chapter 10, In the days of the sounding of the seventh trumpet, it is the time of the dead that they should be judged, and of the prophets that they should receive their reward. That's the resurrection. Now watch this, ladies and gentlemen. The completion of the mystery foretold by the prophets is the sealing of vision and prophecy that would be finished no later than AD 70. Therefore, the resurrection under the seventh trumpet, the completion of the mystery, would be no later than AD 70. Unless you can dichotomize between sealing up the vision or sealing up vision and prophecy and the completion of the mystery of God in Revelation chapter 10 and 11, then since seal up vision and prophecy means to fulfill all prophecy, and all prophecy would be fulfilled in the sounding of the seventh trumpet, that means that the resurrection of Revelation chapter 10, 15, and following would be fulfilled no later than AD 70. But we're not done. All prophecy would be fulfilled by the end of the 70 weeks of Daniel. 70 weeks are determined to seal up vision and prophecy. But the end of the 70 weeks of Daniel 9, according to my opponent's own admission, would be no later than AD 70. Therefore, all prophecy would be fulfilled by AD 70. Now, if my opponent wants to get up here and say, no. In Luke chapter 21, when Jesus said, speaking of the fall of Jerusalem, and by the way, he admits that Luke 21, 22 is the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. But if he wants to argue and say, well, you see, what Jesus is saying in Luke 21, 22, that has to do with the fulfillment of all of Old Covenant Israel's prophecies, and all of those prophecies were ended by then. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? The fall of Jerusalem is unequivocally and irrefutably posited as the time of the resurrection. Therefore, to argue and to agree that all of Israel's Old Testament prophecies would be fulfilled at the time of the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70 is tantamount to saying the resurrection had to happen in AD 70. Let's go on. Daniel was also told 70 weeks are determined to put away sin. I would suggest to you that there is nothing more critically, vitally, and fundamentally, and inextricably linked with resurrection than the concept of putting away sin. Daniel was told 70 weeks ending no later than AD 70 were determined to put away sin. But wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to follow this argument very, very carefully. The putting away of Israel's sin, the time of Israel's salvation. I think Mac would agree with me that Daniel 9 is talking about, that is, through the fulfillment of all of those things of Daniel 9, I think he would agree with me that this is talking about the consummation of Israel's soteriological, that is, her salvation history. Okay? Watch this. 70 weeks, ending no later than AD 70, were determined to put away sin. But the putting away of Israel's sin, that is, the time of Israel's salvation, would be at Christ's parousia, Romans 11, 25 to 27. Paul said, I would not have you to be ignorant of this mystery, brethren, how that blindness in part has happened unto Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. And so all Israel shall be saved. For the Redeemer shall come out of Zion, for this is my covenant with them when I take away their sin. Romans 11 is the coming of the Lord to take away Israel's sin. Let me start again. 70 weeks, ending no later than AD 70, according to my opponent, were determined to put away sin. But the putting away of Israel's sin, that is, the time of Israel's salvation, would be at Christ's parousia, Romans 11, 25 to 27. These two propositions are absolutely irrefutable. Therefore, the time of Israel's salvation is the resurrection. Now, why is that? Because the resurrection is the time of Israel's salvation. In Isaiah chapter 25, verses 6 and following, the Lord predicted that at the time of the destruction of heaven and earth, at the time in which Yahweh would rule on Zion, he would make a great feast on Mount Zion, and he would, quote, swallow up death forever. He would wipe away all tears. Now here's the critical thing. Isaiah 25, verse 8 is the foundation of Paul's resurrection doctrine in 1 Corinthians 15, 55 and 56. But what does Isaiah say about that resurrection promise? Watch this in Isaiah 25, verse 10. And it shall be in that day. In what day? The day in which he will swallow up death forever. The day of the messianic banquet of verse 10. In that day we will say, this is our God, we have waited on him, and we will rejoice in his salvation. The resurrection is therefore the time of Old Covenant Israel's salvation. Now watch this. 70 weeks ending no later than AD 70 were determined to put away sin. That's irrefutable. The putting away of Israel's sin, that is the time of Israel's salvation, would be at Christ's parousia. That's what Paul said in Romans chapter 11. It's irrefutable. The time of Israel's salvation is the resurrection. That's irrefutable. Therefore, the resurrection, i.e. Israel's salvation, would come at the parousia of Christ no later than AD 70. We will eagerly wait to see what Mac has to say about this. Now watch this, ladies and gentlemen. 70 weeks were determined to put away sin. Israel's sin would be removed at Christ's parousia. What we just saw in Romans 11, 25 to 27. But watch this. Watch this very carefully. That time of Israel's salvation at the coming of the Lord is called resurrection. The word's not used, but it's called life from the dead. Well, what's life from the dead? Resurrection. It's called life from the dead in Romans 11, 15. Therefore, watch this. 70 weeks are determined to put away sin. Israel's sin would be removed at Christ's parousia. Romans 11, 25 to 27, the time of resurrection, Israel's resurrection. The time of the putting away of sin is the resurrection at Christ's parousia. Isn't that what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 23 through 56? Then comes the end. Those who are Christ, that is coming. When mortal shall put on immortality, that's the resurrection. So the time of the putting away of sin is the resurrection of Christ's parousia. But wait, well, wait a minute. I forgot to mention something. Well, I didn't forget it. I just wanted you to catch the power of it. The resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 at Christ's parousia, when the mortal would put on immortality, is the time when sin, which is the sting of death, would be removed. Every single constituent element of Romans chapter 11 is found in 1 Corinthians 15. It is therefore the time of the salvation of Israel. But that means, therefore, the resurrection, the putting away of sin, and Israel's salvation. Now, I think everyone understands, but in case you don't, I do not believe in a nationalistic, geopolitical, military restoration of Israel. She was to be restored unto her Messiah in the spiritual kingdom. A spiritual resurrection. Let me reiterate the entire argument. 70 weeks are determined to put away sin. Israel's sin would be removed at Christ's parousia, Romans 11, 25 to 27, which is called her resurrection from the dead. The time of the putting away of sin is the resurrection at Christ's parousia in fulfillment of God's old covenant promises to Israel, the time of her salvation. Therefore, the resurrection, the putting away of sin, and Israel's salvation was no later than AD 70. Now let's tie this up a little bit more on 1 Corinthians 15. The resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 is the time of the putting away of sin at Christ's parousia in fulfillment of God's promises to old covenant Israel. Now how do I know that? Well, because it contains the parousia of Christ, verse 23. It is the putting away of sin, verse 55 and 56. It is in fulfillment of God's Old Testament promises made to Israel because it directly quotes Isaiah 25. So this statement is absolutely irrefutable. But the putting away of Israel's sin, the time of her salvation, belongs to the 70 weeks of Daniel 9, and according to my opponent's own view, would be fulfilled no later than AD 70. Therefore, the resurrection at Christ's parousia of 1 Corinthians 15 would be no later than AD 70. Here's what my opponent has to do to refute this. He has to show that the putting away of sin in fulfillment of Israel's promises in 1 Corinthians 15 at the parousia is not the salvation of Israel of Romans chapter 11, Israel's salvation at her resurrection at the time of the putting away of her sin. Now that's a challenge that he has to meet in order to refute this argument. Now let's look a little bit closer at the parousia in Romans chapter 11. Israel's sin would be removed at Christ's parousia, Romans 11, 25 to 27, which again is called the time of her life from the dead. Now here's the question. Is Romans 11, 26, the coming of the Lord there, is it Christ's incarnation and the salvation of Jews through evangelism throughout the Christian age? Well, that's sort of kind of a traditional argument within the churches of Christ. No, that's not the truth. This is a distortion of the text. Now, how do I know that? Because Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27, would be in fulfillment of Isaiah chapters 27 and chapter 59. Paul quotes three verses in Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27, when he says, "The Redeemer shall come out of Zion, for this is my covenant with them when I take away their sin." He directly cites Isaiah 27, Isaiah 59, and Jeremiah chapter 31, 29 to 31. Now watch this, ladies and gentlemen. The coming of the Lord of Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27 would be in fulfillment of Isaiah 27 and Isaiah 59. But Isaiah 27 and 59 foretold the coming of the Lord, watch this, in judgment of Israel for shedding innocent blood. In Isaiah 59, verses 3, 6, and 7, all the way down through 12, as a matter of fact, God accused Israel over and over of being guilty of shedding innocent blood, of having feet swift to shed or to go and to create violence. And when the Lord saw Israel's sin, he put on the breastplate of righteousness and wrath, and he would come in judgment of Israel and render to his enemies wrath and vengeance, but he would also bring salvation to the remnant. That's what Paul is quoting. So Paul in Romans chapter 11 says the time of the putting away of Israel's sin would be in fulfillment of Isaiah 59. But Isaiah 59 is not the incarnation of Jesus. It is not the preaching of the gospel throughout the Christian dispensation. It is the coming of the Lord in judgment of Israel for shedding innocent blood. When was Israel judged at the coming of the Lord for shedding innocent blood? Well, I know. The Lord came in judgment of Israel for shedding innocent blood in AD 70. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 23 that all of the righteous blood, all the blood shed on the earth, from righteous Abel unto Zacharias, son of Berechias, whom you slew between the temple and the altar, he said, all of these things will come upon this generation. Now, I wonder if the blood that Jesus said went all of the way back to creation, all of the innocent blood that would be vindicated in his coming in the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70, included the blood that Isaiah 59 was talking about, that God would judge at Christ's coming as predicted in Isaiah 59. The argument again is, therefore, Israel's sin would be removed at Christ's parousia, Romans 11, 25 to 27, the time of her resurrection. But Romans 11, 26 is not the incarnation. It is not the proclamation of the gospel throughout the Christian age. It is rather the coming of Christ and judgment of Israel for shedding innocent blood, which occurred in AD 70. Therefore, the coming of the Lord of Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27 was the AD 70 parousia, not the incarnation, not the preaching of the gospel throughout the entirety of the Christian age. We are also told that 70 weeks were determined to make, not to initiate, but to make the atonement for sin. Now I want to make the statement, the atonement would be completed at Christ's second coming, Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 28. Therefore, Christ's coming to complete, not to initiate, but to complete the atonement was confined to the 70 weeks ending no later than AD 70. I want you to notice the perfect parallel between the Old Testament high priest on the Day of Atonement and Jesus Christ in his high priestly work of atonement. Just like the high priest killed the sacrifice, entered into the most holy place, there to make the offering on the hallystereon, the mercy seat, then he came back out to declare salvation. Jesus, it says, Hebrews chapter 9, verse 26, appeared once at the end of the age, put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. He entered into the most holy place, there to prepare a place, and to those who eagerly look for him, he will appear a second time, apart from sin, for salvation. Now watch chapter 10, verse 1. For, this little particle tells us why Christ had to come a second time apart from sin for salvation. For the law having, present participle, having a shadow of good things to come, can never by those sacrifices make the coming thereto perfect. Jesus Christ's second coming was to fulfill the Old Testament high priestly Day of Atonement function. So here's the argument. 70 weeks, ending no later than AD 70, were determined to make the atonement for sin. But the atonement would be completed at the second coming of Christ, which, of course, is the time of the resurrection. Therefore, the resurrection would be no later than, and was no later than, AD 70. I want you to notice the perfect, absolute perfect parallel between Daniel 9, 24 to 27, and Hebrews chapter 9, 24 and following. Daniel 9, 70 weeks are determined to put away sin, to make the atonement, to bring in the world of everlasting righteousness. This would be in the fulfillment of God's old covenant promises to old covenant Israel. It would be Israel's salvation, and it would be no later than AD 70, as Mack agrees. But watch. Hebrews chapter 9 contains every single precise constituent parallel constituent element. Jesus Christ came to put away the sin, to make the atonement, to bring in the everlasting world of righteousness in fulfillment of God's old covenant promises to Israel. This would be in fulfillment of Daniel chapter 9. And when would it take place? Hebrews chapter 10, verse 37, and now in a very, very little while. The Greek is hoson, hoson, mikron. In a very, very little while, the one who is coming will come and will not tarry. My watch says 23. Now, here's the argument. Watch the parallels. Daniel 9, 24 and following predicted Israel's salvation, that is, the putting away of Israel's sin, the making of the atonement, the world of everlasting righteousness, at the fulfillment of God's promises to her. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 28, predicted the time of Israel's salvation, the putting away of her sin, the making of the atonement, the bringing in of the world of righteousness at the fulfillment of God's promises to Israel. Here then is my syllogistic argument. All constituent elements of Daniel chapter 9, 24 to 27 would be fulfilled no later than AD 70. My opponent agrees with that. But all constituent elements of Daniel 9 are the constituent elements of Hebrews 9, verses 24 to 28. Therefore, Hebrews 9, 24 to 28 would be fulfilled no later than AD 70. Let's look a little closer. Hebrews chapter 9 is the completion of the atonement to put away sin, in fulfillment of Israel's salvation hope at the parousia of Christ. But Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27, and I'm sorry if this seems redundant, but I want you to catch the point of it. Romans 11, 25 to 27 is the putting away of Israel's sin, the time of her salvation at the parousia of Christ. But again, 70 weeks ending no later than AD 70 were determined to put away Israel's sin, the time of her salvation. Therefore, the completion of the atonement to put away sin in fulfillment of Israel's salvation hope at Christ's second coming was no later than AD 70. I want you to think very seriously with me of my opponent in eschatology. My opponent says that the old covenant and Israel as God's covenant people legally died at the cross. We have shown, however, that the New Testament writers were anticipating the imminent fulfillment of God's old covenant promises made to Israel. Not promises, listen to me very carefully, not promises made to the church divorced from Israel. If Torah and Israel were legally dead, I ask again, how could the New Testament writers affirm that their eschatological hope, their one hope, was the fulfillment of those legally dead promises that had been given to a dispossessed, legally dead people? Here is the contrast, and here is the conflict in this debate. The contrast between our two positions in this debate could not be greater, nor could they be clearer. I affirm with the Bible that all biblical eschatology is inextricably bound up with God's promises to Old Covenant Israel to be fulfilled at the end of her covenant age, that none of the Old Testament could pass until the fulfillment of those eschatological promises. My opponent affirms, on the other hand, and against the Bible, that Torah and the Old Covenant Israel legally died at the cross. He believes that all New Testament eschatology is about God's promises to the church divorced from Israel to occur at the end of what the Bible calls the endless Christian age, which in fact is, according to him, an age having nothing to do with, pardon me, with Israel and her promises. Here then, ladies and gentlemen, is the contrast and the conflict. So let me summarize very quickly. Daniel chapter 9 foretold the fulfillment of all prophecy by AD 70. It foretold the fulfillment of Israel's salvation hope, that is, resurrection. Resurrection is the time of the putting away of sin, 1 Corinthians 15. The making of the atonement at the second coming, Hebrews 9, 28. We have therefore proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the framework of resurrection, Israel's last days, is the framework for eschatology, resurrection, and the parousia. And the time of the fulfillment of that was in AD 70. We have therefore not only affirmed, but we have demonstrated and proven our proposition that the second, that is, the final coming of Christ, occurred at the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. Thank you very much.